Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and there's a new entry in the de Tocqueville tradition of a stranger's take on American culture. Instead of Democracy in America, one of de Tocqueville's famous titles, my next guest could have called her book Happiness in America. Ruth Whitman moved from London to Berkeley for her husband's job and decided to take the opportunity to stay home with their toddler. But the loneliness and general disconnectedness made her especially attuned to the way people she seemed obsessed, the way people she saw seemed obsessed with achieving happiness. She wrote a much noted essay on the subject for the New York Times that has now become a book called America the Anxious, How Our Pursuit of Happiness is Creating a Nation of Nervous Wrecks. Welcome to WNYC, Ruth Whitman. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And in the essay you wrote that you could tell from Facebook posts whether it came from one of your British or American friends, because Americans are so upbeat, at least in how they present themselves to the world. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, I used to say that, you know, you could blindfold me and read me out the Facebook status updates of my friends, and I could tell you instantly which ones were British and which ones were Americans. Because, you know, the Americans were all kind of, I'm feeling blessed and everything's wonderful and my husband's so great and, you know, my kids are so cute. And then the British ones would be kind of, I'm waiting for a bus and it's rubbish and, you know, it's raining and just kind of miserable. And so, yeah, I mean, over time, I think that the Brits have become a bit more like the Americans in that regard. But definitely, you know, a few years back, it was a very, very clear divide.
So is it a little Britishism in you to lead your title with anxiety and leave happiness for the smaller font of the subtitle?
Actually, that was the publisher's decision, but maybe that speaks to something that people, you know, they think that people are going to buy a book with anxiety in the title. I don't know.
But there's a paradox here, which is that you're saying everybody's so upbeat in their social media posts, but you're seeing a lot of anxiety.
Absolutely. I mean, I think social media itself is kind of a source of anxiety for people, because I think that it's almost like an arms race. You know, there's this currency of social, you know, currency of happiness on social media, which is, you know, let me show my friends how happy my life is. And then I think when people are watching that and, you know, looking through their Facebook feeds and everybody seems so, you know, so incredibly happy, I think that causes people anxiety in and of itself. But I think it speaks to a wider point in American culture that people here value positivity so highly, you know, and that, you know, looking happy, being happy. And I think that in and of itself is a source of stress for people.
Listeners, does this sound like you? Anybody with a foot in two worlds, America and maybe the UK or maybe somewhere else, relating to this? Or what do you want to say or ask of Ruth Whitman, who has written America the Anxious, How Our Pursuit of Happiness is Creating a Nation of Nervous Wrecks? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You call on your skills as a former documentary producer to research the topic with both studies that have been done and some gonzo journalism, if you want to call it that, to try out some of the myriad ways that Americans try to find happiness. What did you do?
I tried all kinds of things. I did a few self-help type things, including one quite controversial self-help weekend where you have to kind of go and be shut in a room for 36 hours. Well, you do get to go home, but the hours are very, very long. And they kind of convince you that the reason why you are unhappy is because it's basically your own fault. And that kind of had quite a, you know, tricky psychological effect on me. I found that quite hard. I went and spent some time in a place in the Nevada desert where a tech billionaire has bought up 60 acres of land in downtown Las Vegas, you know, the buildings, the businesses, and is running it as a kind of happiness community, a kind of innovation and happiness community, where he's persuaded entrepreneurs and people to move from all over the country to come and live there. And it's sort of working along the principles of happiness. And that's became quite a strange and dark place in a number of different ways. I spent some time with the Mormons in Utah, who are statistically America's happiest people. And that was fascinating.
Tell me more about the group thing you did, which is called the Landmark Forum, right?
Right. Yeah.
You didn't find it helpful in achieving happiness. Can you talk about how it's supposed to work?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people, you know, just to say that a lot of people do find this very helpful and even transformative. I mean, when I was there, you know, people were coming out at the end and they were crying and clapping and laughing. It was almost like being at a tent revival, that people thought this thing was absolutely amazing. And I felt quite disassociated from the whole thing. I mean, it was the techniques are very harsh. So people stand up and talk about their, you know, their problems and really quite heart-wrenching stuff often. And the leader will kind of, and this is in a group of maybe 100 people, and the leader kind of picks away and shouts and yells until they kind of pretty much admit, I mean, they don't call it fault, but they use the word responsibility, but you kind of have to admit that your own unhappiness is basically your own responsibility. And I found that kind of a tough message, I have to admit.
Let's take a phone call. Anne in Park Slope, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Hey, good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Okay.
I just had an observation and a question for the author. I live in a neighborhood which, you know, Park Slope has a huge British expatriate community, and I lived in England myself for many years. I've always been aware of the class system in England and the suppression of advancement and the emotional knowing of your place. I don't think it was ever demonstrated more powerfully than, you know, the death of Princess Diana, when suddenly the country erupted in this hysterical mass grieving. I just wonder if the class system has impressed a tamping down of emotion with the British, which makes them take a sort of starry-eyed look at emotions easily expressed by Americans.
That's a really interesting question. And I think you're absolutely right. The British are obsessed with class. And I think that this point that in America, there's this real faith in meritocracy, this real belief that, you know, if you just work harder at something, then you can rise up the scale, become better, you know, the American dream. And I think this kind of obsession or cultural focus on happiness is another face of that. It's kind of like the emotional face of the American dream, that, you know, if we just work harder at becoming happier, then we can achieve it, you know. And this is why the self-help industry is so popular. It's this message that if you just try a bit harder, read another book, you know, go to another class, do another meditation session or yoga class or whatever, then, you know, I will become a better person and that better person will be happier. And I think that's it's an excellent point, that I think maybe in Britain there isn't such a feeling that, you know, you can work hard and rise up. You know, maybe it is a sort of hangover from the class system, that, you know, maybe if you know your place, you're not really trying harder to become happier. I'm not sure.
Anne, thank you very much. One of the studies that you cite in the book is that being religious often goes along with being happy, although not necessarily because of a personal faith, more the community aspect.
Absolutely. I mean, the religious thing was really interesting to me, because I'm, you know, I'm Jewish by culture, but, you know, I'm not very religious at all. And, you know, this idea that very consistently religious people are happier than non-religious people in studies, you know, it's been proved time and time again. But when they control for the fact that religious people tend to have a lot more social support and community, then the happiness advantage disappears. So that's how they know that the reason isn't that kind of private sense of meaning, you know, there is a God, but the fact that, you know, you'll know people in your church or your community. And that was a huge thing I found with the Mormon community. I mean, when I went to stay with a Mormon family in Utah, you know, you're sitting in the living room at night and probably 20 people knocked on the door that night, you know, neighbors dropping around for a chat or to say hello or to bring over some cookies. And, you know, I can't even remember the last time somebody knocked on my door that wasn't trying to sell me something or convert me to something, you know, for no reason.
That finding, though, makes it kind of crazy that people would seek happiness from by themselves, self-reflection, even though I think that can also contribute. But does it imply that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that this was a huge thing that I noticed as I was doing my research, that trends in happiness seeking in America particularly are this idea that we seek it in a very individualistic way. You know, happiness is my personal journey. I look deep inside myself. I'll buy another book. I'll do all these things that are basically on my own. You know, meditation is a huge thing that's taken off recently, or things that are inside my own head, like mindfulness or positive thinking. But really, what all the research shows is that happiness is very much based on our social connections and relationships with other people. So, you know, it's kind of counterproductive to think, you know, this is something I do on my own. Mm.
Patty in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to make a comment. I'm not sure if you can hear me okay, Brian.
We got you just fine. Out. Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I want to thank your guest, actually, because my experience, I moved to the UK back in 1999, and I lived there for 12 years as an adult. And what was shocking for me was, in fact, when I lived in New York, I thought, you know, being happy, being excited about life, just excited about waking up and everything was a part of me. Until I got to the UK, I realized that it's something that you really have to fight to keep and fight to have. So the whole happiness thing, being a community, I think, is sort of true, but I really feel that as Americans fight to be happy, the Brits fight to be unhappy. And I just wanted your guests to comment on that because that was my experience.
Thank you, Patty.
That's an interesting point. I mean, I wouldn't say that British people fight to be unhappy. I think that's probably overstating it. But I definitely think that there's not such a culture of positivity. I mean, one thing that I've always noticed, you know, since moving to Silicon Valley, this idea that people don't talk about problems here. They talk about opportunities. And, you know, I remember once going to the bathroom in our local supermarket, and there was a big sign saying, if this restroom fails to meet your expectations, please inform us of the opportunity. And I was looking around and there was like a big puddle of urine. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, this feels more like a problem to me than an opportunity. And I think that is a very British thing. I think we are a bit more cynical, a bit more skeptical. And, you know, sometimes that can be draining and can feel negative. But at the same time, I think we can be quite realistic, which, you know, which can also be healthy.
Sara in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sara.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I lived in three different countries, and I'm from Eastern Europe, where we are very cynical, very negative, pessimistic, and we do say it. But after living here for a very long time, I realized that I have to control myself and not express that, because people back off, or they don't want to be your friends if you're not happy all the time. They don't want to hear it. And they make you feel guilty for not being happy and grateful and, you know, upbeat all the time. And it's very hard, because it's hard to create real relationships. There are all of these instructions in media and magazines how to keep negative people at bay, but there are no instructions on how to be empathic and how to, I am not someone who's going to drain all of your energy by being negative, but sometimes if I'm not in a good mood or I want to tell you my problems, it would be nice if some people could have some more empathy and create real relationships and friendships where both of us feel like we can confide in each other without feeling like, oh, I'm too negative and I should feel guilty about that.
Sara, thank you very much. So it's so interesting that we're getting some similar, I mean, it's a tiny sample, but you did a whole book that was more scientific. This pattern of complaint or description is recurring. Ruth, did we lose Ruth? Did we actually lose Ruth?
Hi, I can just hear the back line. I can't hear the show.
Well, we're just about out of time anyway. So, Ruth, if you can hear me, I'll ask you one closing question. Do you see a connection between the current political moment and this American happiness industry?
Oh, that's it's an interesting point. I mean, I think that, you know, this current political moment is obviously a huge source of anxiety for people. And I think people are turning more towards all these, you know, solutions and self-help things to kind of calm themselves down. But, you know, and I think both parties are trying to, you know, put a claim on who has the claim to the American dream, who gets to tell the American story. And that is absolutely a story of happiness and who gets to decide, you know, the story of happiness.
Ruth Whipman, WHIPPMAN. Maybe this is familiar to you because you saw her much noted essay on the subject for the New York Times. And it has now been developed into a full length book called America the Anxious: How Our Pursuit of Happiness is Creating a Nation of Nervous Wrecks. Ruth, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.